Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. Happy New Year's. We've got a lot of things happening here at Responsive Fundraising, the first of which is our new partnership with One Cause. This first broadcast in 2020 is brought to you by One Cause, the creator of user-friendly fundraising software that helps nonprofits engage donors, raise more money, and save valuable time and resources. One Cause offers a full suite of cloud-based online and event fundraising solutions. One Cause has powered 5,000 organizations, over 20,000 fundraising events, and helped nonprofits raise more than $2 billion. To learn more, take a complimentary, no-strings-attached online tour of One Cause by visiting www.onecause.com/responsive60. That's www.onecause.com/responsive60. Thanks again to our friends at One Cause for sponsoring this first episode of 2020. I want to welcome you to the first episode of the podcast for 2020, and my guest today is Jennifer Harris, good friend, somebody I've gotten to know over the last couple of years. Jennifer, before we get started, why don't you just introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hi, everyone. I'm Jennifer. Thanks for having me, Jason. I am the founder and president of JH Collective, a holistic fundraising and communications operation. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, Jennifer. So you and I were talking earlier this week, and we said, hey, let's do this as the first episode for 2020. And you and I talked about the idea of you throwing three big curveballs at me, three things that you think matter, really important for 2020. And I suggested that you not tell me what they are so I don't get to prep on them. But let's just spend a half hour talking about them. I'm sure between your network and mine, people are going to be very interested in what this conversation looks like. So what do you think? How about you tee it up with the first one?
Yeah. So should I drop all three at once?
I don't know. I don't know. You have fun with it. If you'd like to, you can throw it all at us, or you can do one at a time. What makes better sense to you?
Well, I think I would contextualize that, you know, one of my favorite conversations with you is balancing, you know, meaning and mastery, which are two things that we talk about. But those aren't the three big rocks that I want to throw at you.
Yeah.
Okay. I really was reflecting on what we can expect in our inbox, you know, come January 1. And as I already am beginning to see emails come in that are talking about 2020 fundraising trends, there's so many people already talking about the doing of fundraising in 2020, like all the things we have to pay attention to, that it's a election year, for example, or new trends in donor advised funds, or, you know, all the new technologies that we can start to integrate into our practices, like blockchain and AI. And all this stuff is really cool. Like, I'm on board with like innovations in fundraising, but as you and I have gotten to know each other, both philosophically and personally, I really was thinking about like what would I encourage people to reflect on in the year end, and then in moving into 2020.
Yeah.
And the three words that become concepts that can actually become actionalized, I think, that come to mind for me are like the first big rock is purpose. So I would encourage fundraising leaders and professionals to think about purpose, to think about curiosity, and to think about mastery, one of the topics that you and I love to dig into.
I can dig into how
I see those three words kind of operating, but I would love your impressions first.
Yeah, I have to imagine, Jennifer, that you put those in order, in that particular order, on purpose. Am I right?
Yeah.
Because I mean, I have to think that purpose has to come first. I have been using the word. I have become more familiar with the word. I think when you and I were together earlier this year, I talked about the word sagacity. Is that the right pronunciation of that word?
I think so.
I think sagacity is consistent with that word, with your idea of curiosity. So we'll have to see where you go with that. And then obviously mastery. I think the definitions of mastery that are out there for fundraisers. I know you and I have talked about this too, and it'll be interesting to see where we go with it. But just this idea that we've spent too long trying to be master technicians, and we need to be maybe fundraising leaders or something. So, but I want to hear you talk about them. So yeah, let's start with purpose. Where are we going to take purpose?
I would just like to address one of your thoughts for a quick second. Yes, they came out in a linear fashion.
Uh-huh.
And they're also concentric, right? Like, okay. So when I look at a human from the inside out, I go, okay, purpose first, curiosity is a way of being, and mastery is this sort of like aspirational end game.
Yeah.
But when I also look at how we are operating and living and breathing in daily life, like these things are all happening at once. So when I talk about being and doing or meeting and mastery, it is a continuum, but it's also both things are happening at once. And so what I mean by that is, okay, for a fundraiser, you know, one of the, and even a young fundraiser and even a fundraising leader, I would ask like, what is our call to purpose? You know, so what does it mean to do this work, and why do I do it? Why do I, the individual, do it, right?
Yeah.
That gets lost in the fray. And when we talk about things that happen that lend itself to burnout, often it is when there is a lack of purpose and meaning, right? So we're in a field with high turnover and frankly, a lot of toxicity and burnout. And so purpose is something that I believe we can uplift as one of the sort of essential values and fundamental foci in the year of 2020. So that's purpose.
Are you using the word purpose interchangeably or distinctively different from passion? Because I get a little tired of the word passion, quite frankly, because it just gets used a lot in our space. It gets used a lot in a lot of spaces. But I have an inkling that you're probably using it somewhat differently than the word passion. And I think a lot of our listeners who aren't necessarily going too deep on this yet, but I think, are we drawing a line between what passion and purpose is?
Yeah, I am personally. I'm kind of a word person myself, obviously a writer at my core, and passion to me is like a zeal. You know, it's action. You can be passionate about your call to purpose.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
You know, you can have a collection of passions. You know, things that we do. We need passionate fundraising professionals, but purpose begins from the inside out. Passion, I feel like, is an expression of.
Okay.
But you know, I could be totally challenged on that notion. You know, I'm an exuberant person, as we can tell on this call. So I'm often will say I'm very passionate about, you know, missions, visions, causes, people, humanity, you know, but my call to purpose is very distinct. You know, very unique.
We'll call it a call to action. So if one of the calls to action from Jennifer Harris in 2020 if we were trying to put it in a single sentence, what are we doing with purpose in 2020 as fundraising professionals before we move on to the next?
So I said it's about inquiry, right? So it's asking, what does it mean to do this work as a fundraiser, right? Okay, so that's the big one. And why do I do it, Why do I individually do it? So it's starting from the inside. It's connecting the self to the work. Because when you begin to disassociate the self from the work, there's no meaning in it. And that can lend itself to burnout. Now, that is very, very complex, right? Like, meaning making is a negotiation process every single day. And I'll give you an example so that maybe your listeners will better kind of connect with this concept. So connecting self to the work, something I've talked about often in my workshops. When I was a young frontline fundraiser, fundraising in the academic medical center, I inherited portfolios, right? So I inherited service lines that I had to raise money for.
Sure.
And one of the service lines I inherited was anesthesiology. Now, as a young fundraiser, I'm thinking to myself, how on earth am I going to raise money for anesthesiology? Most people don't even see their anesthesiologist when they're in surgery. So I'm racking my brain going, of course, I get anesthesiology, emergency medicine, all these things that are like, you don't build this, you know, deep connection with your clinical care provider.
Yeah.
And then I went to interview the head of anesthesiology, who turns out that he was the director of a pain management clinic. And I said to him, I said, this is really tough. You know, like, what can I do to better understand the value of this service line? And he started to tell me stories about how many people were in chronic pain and how anesthesiology is not just about, you know, hooking someone up to, you know, pain drugs, if you will, in a surgery suite, that it's about like managing chronic pain. And he started to tell me stories about what's going on in the world and how people relate to pain. And all of a sudden I was like, I get it. You know, like, I can connect with pain. And if I can connect with pain at the core of my being, if I can connect myself to pain to the work that needs to be done in the world, then I can fundraise for anesthesiology. Right. So like, a call to purpose is, what does it mean to do this work and why do I do it? If you cannot relate to the work, how are you going to sell it? Right. How are you going to fundraise for it?
Yeah.
I have board members in my client base right now that would say, you know, people will see through me if I cannot relate to the work. Right. So that's how I identify it. It's about purpose. It's about self first, then self to the work, you know, work to the team, to the organization, to the donor relationships, to the community, to the world. Does that make sense?
It totally does. So take us to curiosity now. I got you on that one.
Okay, awesome. So, and you'll see that purpose runs through, right? Like, so curiosity was something that came to me last night. And I literally, after you were like, let's talk about this, because I think curiosity also runs through all of us, and it runs through it's like the lifeblood of who you are, Jason, and who I am. You know, we're such nerds. So someone asked me yesterday, like, what would you recommend a young fundraiser think about when they're entering this field? And I said, they have to be curious.
Yeah.
And I was like, curiosity can't stop when you are 23 entering the field. Curiosity is something that we have to, that needs to bleed through our entire career trajectory. And what I mean by that is, it's curiosity again about yourself. It's curiosity about the work. It's curiosity about the profession, right? Like, you and I are constantly asking each other, what do we need to be successful? What do fundraisers need to be successful? What do EDs need for them to be able to see fundraisers well enough to equip them with the tools that they need to be successful? Curiosity is the connective tissue there.
Yeah.
Like, for me, like, get curious. What are you thinking?
I think Jennifer, that the younger of us, so I've been in it for 22 years. How do the people that are our peers and older than us, keep that curiosity going? When I think of some of my peers, some of my colleagues, and some of my, some of my mentors have lost some of their curiosity about what it is we're doing.
Yeah. So there's like this affectation that there's this like thing that's happened. Like some of it is, I would go so far as to say that our journey into adulthood, you know, yeah. our rose colored glasses yeah. to some extent have been shattered. And yet I believe that we can, you know, kind of put those glasses back on if we lead from within and start to embrace concepts like purpose and curiosity. And what I mean by that, you know, these aren't concepts that I'm naming or inventing, right? These are yeah. people, I read people who are talking about this. And one of the thought leaders that I really appreciate is Adam Grant. And mm-hmm. he did a podcast recently where he talked about how when you are interviewing for jobs, and I think this is so important for fundraisers, especially with the level of turnout in our field, or turnover rather, when you're interviewing for jobs, to ask people to tell you a story about how they've been felt seen, valued, and appreciated on the job. And then he said, ask them to tell you a story about how they feel like they've been able to influence or create impact. And when he was saying this, he was being intentional because he said in the interview process, people aren't often telling you stories that can help you gauge culture, that can help you gauge fit, that can help you really, I would go so far as to say, get curious about if you are a fit there. And yeah. I think as a young professional, I wasn't equipped with that knowing, right? Like now I am, even with clients. So what does it look like for fundraising leaders or young fundraisers, so both, to go into an environment and get curious about how and if they can feel seen, valued, and appreciated, how and if they can actually make a difference on the job, you know, like kind of really, really get clear on if you can do meaningful or purposeful work in that particular office or organization. Yeah, it's going to take building new muscles.
What if part of the reason why those of us who have been around for a while feel like we're what if part of the reason why those of us who have been around a while in the field are experiencing this turnover oftentimes feel exploited is in some ways because we've lost the curiosity that sort of energizes and sort of creates that optimism for what is possible, both in terms of our own purpose and mastery, which is sort of on your other two circles there. But I just went through a process with a particular client. A client interviewing candidates for a particular client. And I think about the candidate that was probably the most curious, also demonstrated the most desire to learn, also demonstrated the most willingness to be teachable, a certain level of vulnerability. But at the same time, I'm sitting here thinking about the way he interviewed. He wasn't the most experienced in the room. He wasn't the youngest person in the room. He kind of fits right in the middle of these four candidates that we were interviewing. I'm just thinking he demonstrated a degree of curiosity. He might land the job, Jennifer, because of his curiosity. I just kind of wonder about that. And I even think yeah. about a conversation I had, I don't know, 6 months ago here on the podcast with an individual who couldn't score jobs. And I'm just wondering how many times they really went in and demonstrated just absolute curiosity to the level, like curiosity on a level that like they didn't know the answers. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I just think that, and I think that's one of the things that we don't bring to the lunch table when I think about having lunch with donors, for example. I don't think we bring that genuine curiosity, which is like, are you really bringing questions that don't already have answers to them?
I mean, I always talk about leading with questions, right? And, you know, trusting the questions themselves to, you know, quote Rilke, if you will. But, you know, what I love about what you're saying and as it relates to our universe, like imagine if curiosity was on a job card. Yeah. Like imagine if that was a metric by which we measured talent. Yeah, now I'll tell you something that I just wrote about, though. I literally just wrote about this, and I got approval from my friend in Chicago, which if he listens to this, he might laugh. He's an entrepreneur, and his restaurant business used to have this hiring criteria that was 51% innate, 49% technical.
Okay.
51%, or he'll say 51% personality. I call it innate. 51% innate, 49% technical. We can teach the technical. We cannot teach the innate. When I look at hiring fundraisers, I would gamble on the curious person, on the person with a bigger heart in a heartbeat, right? Like, tell me, you know how to like file contact reports is superfluous to me.
Yeah.
If you know Salesforce, Razor's Edge, or Millennium, whatever they're called back in the day. You know, that's the thing though, Jason, is like what we, when I say get curious, it's about get curious about what we also need in this field. And when we go to conferences and we're learning all of these new tactics, but are we learning to be curious? Are we learning to ask bigger questions? To like, you and I do this all the time. I know we go to, you know, go to town on these ideas, but like, I'll ask questions about like, what if that's not, ask a leader in an interview about like, what's the best strategy that you've experienced in raising money in the past? You know, like I would be curious about what they say, and have they considered partnering with another organization that shares values? I'd be curious about what they say instead of like, you know, how many, what are the goals, financial goals? How many moves do I have to make in a month? You know, what if I don't meet my goals?
Yeah.
How much time off do I get? Can I work from home? You know, like those are signs to me. And I would hire for curiosity and heart all day. And I did as a young leader too.
So go to before we move to the last one. So just sit on the idea of meetings, for example, rather than asking the technical question, you know, the very objective number, how many meetings did you get this month? For example, why aren't we curiously asking the question? You know, what is it about me that's slowing me down? You know, there's the self-awareness component of it, but then there's also the cultural component of it, which is to say that, hey, when you're picking up the phone, nobody wants to answer your phone calls. I mean, that's where the curiosity comes from, because there's no, you know, tips and tricks and absolute answers to some of those questions. You have to start drawing conclusions about yourself, and you have to start drawing, you know, questions about, start drawing up theories about why your culture is behaving a particular way. I think about what I do with some of my clients who've been entrenched in, you know, arm's length fundraising for decades, and they're saying, well, we can't get meetings. And it's like, because you're lacking so much curiosity about the people that you're meeting with or want to meet with. You don't really want to get to know these people. You just want them to write you a damn check. And it's that curiosity that sort of is interwoven into the process. And you have to warm that up inside of a culture, and you have to warm that up inside of yourself. I think about the last 5 years, that sort of the personal professional journey that I've sort of gone on. And I got to tell you, there's been some pretty curious time. You know, this is like me being real, really having to confront myself, but it just certainly originates with a certain degree of curiosity.
I mean, what I love that you just said, what I like so love, and you'll laugh that I didn't put this as one of my three big rocks for 2020, but you know, I talk about authenticity, and you just defined authenticity and that whole narrative there, like where you were talking about, like, they don't really want to get to know you. They just want you to write a check. I'm like, that is the breakdown. That's where like authenticity impacts performance, right? Like, and donors can see through that. And, you know, obviously authenticity runs through these three rocks that we're talking about, that it really truly is building trusted connections, center on being curious, being authentic, being vulnerable, being open, being, you know, radical listening, kind of seeing your donors as humans. And and is that difficult? 100%. Like, it is so difficult, especially if you are held to really high financial standards in a nonprofit organization. And you know, heart-centered individuals, which a lot of people are in our field, You know, that notion that someone won't take your call can wreck them, you know, that can make them feel like a failure. Like, I can't get a meeting. You know, it's very complex in our sector, you know, like all the way we measure performance is almost in malalignment with why we exist in the first place. And I think there's got to be a way in which we shift that paradigm. Like, what if you did measure curiosity?
Have we ever seen an executive or a VP just come out as publicly as they possibly can and say, you know what, the numbers that I've got to raise, like, have you ever seen anybody genuinely express fear that what is out in front of them just scares the jajibis out of them? Like, genuinely, so not like marketing tactics, right? Not like a script that's supposed to, you know, I'm talking about, have you ever seen somebody who's demonstrating a degree of authenticity that, cause that's what everybody's going to be thinking about. People who are listening to this recording, Jennifer, are going to be like, first 2 weeks of January, those numbers are brand new now. Everything we accomplished in 2019, the slate has been wiped clean. We've spent all that money. Now we've got to raise this all again. But how many people are going to be very sort of completely honest with themselves and with their organization and even with their major donors that, golly, these numbers really scare me?
So I love that. Love that inquiry. I think I touched on that a little bit in the Chronicle article where, you know, I worked for nearly a decade in an organization where massive financial goals just came down the pike. Yeah. And we never challenged them. We just said yes. And we never said yes, and this is what it will take to deliver on that.
Yeah.
But an extension of that inquiry, I would say, is, so apart from, you know, academic orgs and hospitals, there are nonprofits that are trying to do real game-changing work in the world. And what if they actually said, you know, I want to feed hungry kids across this region, or I want to find a cure for cancer. And, you know, we don't know if we can, you know, like, but we're going to sure give it a shot. You know, like, that's so one of my mentors back in the day used to use this phrase that I loved that I feel like fundraisers could co-opt. He was a scientist, and he used to say, you know, in science, we have to balance hype and hope. And that statement takes forever because let's try to raise 5 million. Let's try to raise 100 million. Let's try to change the world. And let's also be really honest about where our barriers to success are, where our points of fear are, you know, where all the things, you know. And so balancing hype and hope is really important for fundraising professionals, because sometimes we might not meet those goals, but that doesn't mean we're a failure or that the dream is any less valuable. It just might not be the right time.
Okay, so tie this up and pull all this together with mastery, because I'm anxious to sort of hear where you're going to take this.
Well, since you have my brain working on overdrive right now, I'm thinking about a million different things and so many conversations you and I have had. So I feel like what I love about mastery, because that term came from me spending time with you, you know, just like really, truly thinking about and chatting about, you know, not just what we need to be successful, or how we define mastery, but like what the end game is in our role as professional fundraisers. And is there an end game? And you and I both define mastery very differently. You know, like, I see and envision mastery as sort of an ongoing quest. And, I believe Daniel Pink defined it as this sort of, journey to constantly improve, or like the desire to constantly improve. Don't quote me on that, but Daniel Pink talks about mastery and drive.
Yeah.
So I see mastery as something in motion. But when I think about that for fundraisers, I posted something a couple weeks ago, a very simple question. I asked, what do fundraisers really need? there were not a lot of answers to that question. And I think that for me, mastery is a big rock for 2020 and beyond, because what we think we need and what we have are not in dialogue together.
Wow.
They're like separate conversations. So what we think we need and what we have are not in dialogue together. And I ask fundraisers all the time, what do you think you would need to do your job better? And more often than not, it's not, to go back to the start of our conversation, more information on donor advised funds or blockchain or AI, or integrated social strategies. It's, I want to be seen, valued, and appreciated by my supervisor. I want to be more creative in my capacity to connect with people. Like, these are real human instincts and desires, right? Like, so is mastery a blend of purpose and curiosity? I'm not sure, right? Like, I ask you that, Jason.
I think
you and I talk about,
I think there's an anxiousness. I think you're describing, the first word that comes to mind is sort of, because I like to talk about the profession and sort of as if the profession was this one individual standing in front of us. I think the profession is experiencing, and it relates to my definition of sort of a messy adolescence. I think there's, or maybe a sort of a mature, that anxiousness that comes with sort of any period of transition and maturity. And you think about a young person who, for example, anyone who has graduated from college sort of experiences a season of anxiousness about, okay, what comes next? And I think our profession, as it relates to everything you just said, Jennifer, is experiencing an anxiousness. And it relates back to that question that you posed on social media. It's that idea that I don't need any more gadgets and gizmos. I don't need any more tactics to, say, secure the first gift. I don't need any more online. It's got to make the question you're posing sort of has to make, like, conference organizers and technology companies and a lot of other people that are trying to sort of answer that question on behalf of us nervous, because I don't think those of us who really want to do this really well are grasping for any of that anymore. I'm not picking on any one particular conference organizer, but I think we all know who I'm talking about. I mean, I was at a conference, 2 years ago, and I think about walking around that exhibit hall, and I think about the number of companies that were trying to help development officers answer that question. I think when you pose that question, it's like, I'm looking around and nobody's really helping me answer that. And the solutions that are out there are just so trivial in I don't know that we could just go for another hour on that one. So.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. Right. Like I'm trying to be respectful, right, to the fact that insofar as I believe that some of the tools are valuable. I don't think that we can, and I say this jokingly, and I've said it to a board, I don't think we can just meditate for abundance. I've said this several times, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think there are some tools and tactics that are added value, that create infrastructure, that help us set realizable aspirations. And yet I just believe that, like, mastery is not learning to use these tools and tactics so skillfully. It goes back to the curiosity conversation, right? Like, mastery to me is the integration of all of these things. It's like embodying your purpose. It's leading from within. It's connecting with your team, yourself and your team and donors. It's like finding meaning along the way, right? It's like, so you don't feel defeated when you don't close a gift or win a gift,
well,
right?
Like, I think of the critique that has gone on in recent years, especially since the recession, as it applies to consumption. Tools, yeah, as we're the way we would characterize a tool is not a whole lot different than those who are critiquing the way our economy is built around consumption. If I go to my local hardware store, I can buy a dozen different versions of a hammer. But once I've got a relatively good hammer in my hand, I don't need to keep reinventing the hammer. And the same thing has been said about, you know, our grocery stores. Once you've gotten, you go down the cheese aisle these days and there's like so many different versions of cheese. And at some point we have to sort of say, okay, the tools that we have in our hand are adequate. Now we have to go and become masters of using those tools. And I think the industry, the profession keeps trying to sell us new tools, but not affording ourselves the sufficient margin or not getting, you know, we got to turn off the fascination with new tools and start saying, okay, I've got these tools in my hand. How am I going to master the use of them? You know, I think about somebody who's a very talented carpenter probably prefers, you know, well-used tools that he or she has been using for probably decades. And a master carpenter, probably isn't the one constantly shopping for, you know, new tools.
Yeah. I mean, I love that analogy and I get it fully. And then I go back to the fact that like, we're not building a house or bricking a road, right? Like we are fundraisers, which I fear saying by definition, because we don't have a definition, a universal definition, but fundraisers, as I define it for myself, fundraisers are stewards of social change. And like the tools to get there are, some may not be even invented yet, right? So like, what are the things that we can lean on right now that guarantee progress, can contribute to this very vague term that we use often called impact. You know, like it's not building a house and then we're done using a hammer, building a house, we're done, family moves in, right? Like social change is a current. You and I read all of these things, right? Like when we read an article, I think you and I both did, that was talking about, like what happens when you sort of realize your mission, then you have to create another problem so that your reason for being continues to persist as an organization. I remember being really curious about that concept because, you know, social change is not static. From my perspective, there's not just like an end game. There's going to be new problems along the way or new challenges that fundraisers need to rise up into. And I think, So I think when I use mastery, again, it's not prescriptive. I'm actually genuinely curious about what fundraising professionals need. And I want them to rise up and tell us, right? Like what would make you perform better on the job?
Yeah.
You know, like in your unique circumstance. And as consultants and coaches that you and I both are in many ways, we've been talking about like, what do we sell them? Right? Like how do we know what they need until we are in partnership with them? You know, how do we know what they need until we see them at work with their people and know their purpose and know how curious they are? You know, again, that is not to say that some of the things that consultants sell or tech companies sell aren't valuable, because I recommend some of those to colleagues and clients. And I think the path to fundraising success is much bigger than that. And it's much more about connecting the self with the work in the world. I think that's why I'm a proponent for holism being sort of the lens by which we see our work.
Pull all this together before I let you go. So we're calling fundraisers to action on these three particularly potent points, but what would you sort of say is the overarching call?
So for me, like both of these, first of all, and I've used this word again several times, I'm not trying to be prescriptive. These are nuggets for people to think about as they, you know, walk into the year ahead, like how, you know, again, so what is it purpose? What does it mean to do this work and why do I do it? So curiosity, how can I be curious about myself in relation to the work, in relation to the people that I work with, in relation to the profession that I work in relation to the work that I want to do in this world, and mastery, like, what do I need, right? To what do we need to reimagine together so that I could negotiate meaning on the job, boost morale in my life and among others, contribute to a healthier self, a healthier work environment, a healthier world. For me, these are, again, it's linear and it's integrative. And I think with tools, right, with the right tools, you know, our capacity to lead as fundraising professionals is limitless. And I it's just my hope for the world that a new crop of fundraising professionals will start to see themselves as more than doers, you know, like as more than just people who are on a front line, closing gifts, winning gifts, you know, you name the jargon that percolates through our field, but rather as true, like, stewards and conduits of social change. And that the money that comes in is just nourishment for, you know, the cause or the mission, you know, that you're called to serve. That's kind of what I feel.
Yeah, and I hear the fire alarms going off in the back. So you've apparently gotten yourself in a lot of trouble here.
This is what living near a hospital sounds like. Yeah.
Jennifer,
I know,
it's,
right?
You've lit everything on fire. So now that you've lit everything on fire, if somebody's listening to us today, they know how to find me, and I'm sure a lot of people know how to find you as well. But if somebody doesn't, how would you suggest that they find you?
I would say LinkedIn is, you know, our family room, Jason.
Yeah.
It's where we like to stoke conversations in front of the fire. So LinkedIn would be awesome, Jennifer Harris. Super interested in authentic ask experiences. So if people want to send me what they believe their most authentic ask experience has felt like, they can email me at jennifer@jhcollectiveinc.com.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.